Okay, I'm sitting here with Bridget Fox, who's the local parliamentary candidate for Islington South and Finsbury, which is my constituency, and for the Liberal Democrats. And she's kindly agreed to give me an interview, and obviously as a local voter, I'm interested to find out what people are standing for and on what platforms, and ask some personal questions of my own. Bridget, can I ask you firstly, you've fought for the seat before, haven't you?
I've not stood in Islington South at parliamentary level before, but I've been elected twice as a councillor within the constituency.
Okay.
And I previously stood as a Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate elsewhere, but always while living in Islington. So Islington's the one I really wanted to go for.
Really? So where did you stand for before?
Well, it's every aspirant candidate needs to stand in places they can't win before they stand somewhere they can. And I stood in 1997 in Hampstead and Highgate, which is a Labour-Tory marginal seat, and increased the share of the Lib Dem vote at a time when the country was swinging to Tony Blair, so that was a good result. And then last time, purely as a paper candidate in East Ham to give local Liberal Democrats someone to vote for while campaigning myself here in Islington.
Okay, and you've been a Liberal Democrat councillor in the local government in Islington. It's the majority of the borough, I think, isn't it?
There's two parliamentary constituencies which between them cover the whole of the borough.
Okay.
Islington North and Islington South and Finsbury, and the latter's mine.
Do you think that Chris Smith standing down at this election has given you more of a chance?
Absolutely. It's given our campaign a huge boost because for two reasons. One is that Chris had a big personal vote. People who voted for Chris, despite the fact almost of him being the Labour candidate or without reference to his party. And obviously those votes are now floating votes again. Also, there are people who don't want to vote Labour, but might have still voted Labour if Chris were the candidate because they would have felt didn't want to put a guy out of a job, so to speak. That's no longer the case. So the fact that the incumbent's standing down has two huge boosts to our campaign. Plus the fact it puts all the candidates on a level playing field in terms of their profile and experience. And I think it's probably fair to say, because I've been at a local council and I've been campaigning so hard for so long, I've got one of the best profiles of the candidates, which wouldn't be the case if I was up against a sitting MP.
No, that's true. And I mean, one of the things that, for voters of conscience, is that you can go to theyworkforyou.com on the internet and you can see exactly the voting record of your MP. So if you want to examine the record of somebody that you've either put in or voted against and decide whether you want to change your vote or remain loyal, you can do that. But of course, we can't do that for any of the people in this borough, which makes it particularly fascinating for me.
That's right. I mean, as I say, Chris Smith's been a very popular MP, and this election isn't about Chris Smith because he's standing down. But there are issues there where Labour MPs in general have there have been some broken promises by the government, specifically on tuition fees, which was a big issue. Labour government promised they wouldn't introduce tuition fees. They've now proposed to introduce top-up fees on top of tuition fees. That was a broken manifesto pledge. And this one's particularly relevant in a place like Islington, where you've got a lot of aspirant people who want to make a contribution, and fees may put them off. And Chris Smith, that only got through by three votes, and one of those votes was Chris Smith, so I think that's a pity. However, we've got to choose a new MP anyway. So the Lib Dems are now the only party nationally committed to changing that on equitous way of funding higher education.
So you've obviously been out canvassing and doorstepping.
Indeed,
already.
This is a welcome break.
I'm just wondering what issues you're being met with on the doorstep. I mean, you mentioned the price of education, which is an issue I can sympathise with. I was very lucky. I mean, I was one of the last people, I'm 43, I was one of the last people I know to have got a full living away from home grant, everything paid for, and including my fees. And I know I wouldn't have had the career I've had and made the economic and cultural contributions I've made if I hadn't got that. I just wouldn't
Absolutely.
Have done. Single parent family, you know. So for me, it's an issue I do feel strongly about. Are you finding that that's something you meet
on the
doorstep?
Yes, it is. And not from the people who necessarily the families have always sent kids to university, not just from the middle class, well-established families who you might expect would send their kids anyway but would quite like the state to pay. It's actually the biggest issue among aspirant families, people who would not perhaps have been the first generation of their families to go to university and now may not be the first generation of their families to go to university, maybe the nth generation not to go to university because of this change. And there are lots of people now, and you may have experienced this yourselves, who don't have a conventional 16 to 60 solid employment history. The world's not like that anymore. and people don't want to embark on their working life with debts already building up when they don't have a certain career path in front of them. And I want young graduates to feel that they're safe to go into voluntary work, the arts, set up small businesses, work in the public sector, none of which necessarily pay large or pay consistently. And if people have got leaving university with debts, the likelihood is that they won't contemplate that wide range of jobs from which society can benefit, and I think that's a great pity. I think it's particularly unjust from a Labour government, which ought to be about extending opportunity. That's their rhetoric, but the reality has been very different. Like you, I'm 40 now, I went to university and I was the first generation not to get the maintenance grants, ours were means tested, which I think is fair enough. But certainly our fees were paid for, and I think that's as it should be, and only the Lib Dems are pledged to restore that. It's about fairness.
I think actually only the Lib Dems amongst the major three parties, it's safe to say that. I think the Lib Dems are amongst the big three parties.
Yes.
But there are many other parties, and as we know.
Yes, I'm unfamiliar with the Monster Ravy Hooley's position on tuition fees.
The Green Party, for example. I think they're probably to the left of the Liberals and definitely to Labour and the Conservatives on that, from my memory. But I'll go back and check that, actually. But it's an interesting thing.
But of the major parties, certainly.
Of the major parties, yeah. What other issues are you being met with on the doorstep?
Council tax being a very unfair tax, Britain's most unfair tax. Thanks to the council tax, the bottom 20% of taxpayers pay a far higher proportion of their income in tax than the top 20%. That's wrong in any society, I think.
It was wrong when it was the poll tax.
And I think it's disgraceful under a Labour government. That is exactly what people elect a Labour government to tackle. They haven't tackled it. And the council tax hits Islington particularly hard, because council tax, as you all know, it's based not on your ability to pay, but the notional value of your home. So where you have people on low incomes and fixed incomes living in a high property price area, which is Islington, then you get these multiple injustices. And a lot of my casework, already even as a local councillor, is from people facing really huge financial challenges. Because the council collects the council tax, they come to us as councillors about the problems they've got paying it. I'm pleased that Islington's Lib Dem Council has kept the council tax below the London average, which is a start. But what we really need is a fairer system to start with. And again, of the main parties, it's only the Lib Dems who are proposing to do anything about it.
And these are the issues I'd expect you to be talking about, because these are the central planks of the Liberal Democrat agenda set out in the manifesto. And I'd expect you to be prepared to be talking about that.
Well, those are two of our top 10 issues. But, I mean, to be frank, some of our top 10 issues nationally, one of them is about free transport for the elderly. We've already got that in London, thanks to boroughs like Islington contributing to the cost of the Freedom Pass. So that's not what we'll be campaigning here. You've got to do what responds to local needs. But I think fairness and the other thing is a sense of safety and pride in people's community is the other thing that's coming up. Islington's a very diverse borough, great extremes of wealth and poverty, and that can cause tensions. And I think all people who are aspiring to represent Islington have got to want to represent all of Islington, and have got to put forward policies that create that sense of safety and pride and mutual respect and don't promote fear and division. And that's increasingly an issue in this election.
Specifically, what would you do to bring that about?
Well, I think Bobbies on the Beat is, you know, used to be a bit of a cliche, and at one point it was seen as a rather old-fashioned and unfashionable policy. We were told that, you know, we needed to invest all this money in high-tech crime prevention, and that Bobbies on the Beat... There was some statistic a few years ago that was bandied around that if you have a bobby patrolling the beat every day, he only actually detects about 2 crimes a year or something, which I never believed then. But the point is, it's about deterrence as well as detection. It's about giving people that sense of safety. Crime figures in London in general are falling. Violent crime, sadly, is rising, and that's a particular issue. But in general, crime is falling. But people's sense of safety isn't increasing with that. And that visible presence of Bobbies on the Beat to deter low-level crime and make people feel safe in the place that is their home is really important. Islington is an inner-city borough with potential great divisions, and yet only half our wards have got the new safer neighbourhoods teams that were promised by the Labour government. Lib Dems have identified funding that could put those teams in place in every ward tomorrow. I think that's important. That's a priority for us. It's very practical. And if we didn't spend the money set aside for compulsory ID cards on compulsory ID cards, we could spend that now on Bobbies on the Beat, which I think would be much more practical and make people feel safer.
I was going to ask you about the war. It surprises me that that you haven't mentioned the Iraq war. In all of the reports I've had from people who are canvassing It comes up again and again on the doorstep. Have you not met that?
Oh, of course it does. And it's one of the big reasons that voters are switching to the Liberal Democrats. But I think it's important that Lib Dems like me make it clear that we're not a single-issue party and this isn't a single-issue election. And those other issues, which are what governments do, are important. But yes, the war's a touchstone issue for lots of people. We can't go back now and undo it. Liberal Democrats wouldn't start from here. We were the only mainstream national party to oppose the war. And I marched with millions of others on the eve of Valentine's Day 2 years ago now, to little effect, sadly, because the government took us into the immoral and illegal war without the consent of the people. I think many people, for that issue alone, will simply not vote Labour again, or certainly not at this election. The war is also about trust and the relationship between government and the people, and it's also made a lot of British citizens from a wide range of backgrounds feel less safe than they should in their own country. And for all those reasons, yes, it's a big issue for us.
But this issue of safety, I mean, we're living in a post-9/11 world.
Yes.
We're living in an era where extra controls are being brought in on the basis that we need them because we're under attack. I heard this morning that the Liberals were saying that, I can't remember how many billions would be wasted at bringing in the ID card system.
How many billions
were quoted? I think Charles Kennedy said it was 3 billion or...
Yes, I mean, it's billions. And
it
how many
billions?
I mean, there isn't a single public computer system procurement that hasn't run way over budget. So whatever number you start with, you can probably double it. But we think it's wrong in principle. And therefore, however many billions it is, that's money that could be better spent elsewhere. And most people I talk to seem to agree with that.
But how do you answer the other parties? How do you counter their argument that you're making the country more insecure?
Well, ID cards, the arguments for ID cards are that you can prove someone's identity. And I think the people who, individual constituents I've spoken to who initially favour ID cards, feel instinctively that if you can check someone, verify someone's identity, that you can screen out the bad guys and you can make sure that people only get what's entitled to them once they're within your community,
okay.
That they're born here or they're new arrivals. And I just think that that's, whatever you think of the rights and wrongs of ID card, those two arguments are in practical terms flawed. If you have someone who is determined to commit a terrorist atrocity and put their own life at risk in the process, then either subverting, getting through without an ID card or having a forged ID card is just going to be part of the package. And that's what happened with the 9/11 bombers. They are in a country, the States, where you have to have an ID card, particularly if you're doing things like flying planes and crossing borders. And the Madrid train bombers, they're in a country, Spain, which has compulsory ID cards. So it's simply not true that ID cards prevent terrorism, because we've had very recent, all too graphic examples where that isn't the case. And in terms of people's day-to-day worries about people accessing services that they're not entitled to, well, an ID card doesn't prove your entitlement, it merely proves your identity. If I had an ID card and then went to claim benefits, there would be nothing on that ID card to say whether or not I was currently in work, whether I currently had a medical condition that entitled me to claim those benefits. It would merely prove that I was the person I said I was. And so unless you have such a mass of information on these ID cards that they will be constantly out of date and you would need the world's most comprehensive computer system ever to run them, leaving aside all the issues about civil liberties with that amount of data in one place, then it's not going to happen in practice. And an ID card which simply says, confirms your ID, which many, many people have some form of anyway, but it's voluntary, is not going to solve either the problems of countering terrorism, which is very rare and very specialised, and a bit of plastic isn't going to deter these guys, or people being fraudulent. We do need to deter terrorism. And, of course, it's a terrible diversion if the government says, well, trust us, over the next 10 years we'll develop an ID card system and that will solve it. You know, we've got people who are a threat to the country potentially now. So I think diverting those monies and putting them into more practical and immediate anti-terrorism measures is the right thing to do. And some of the Lib Dem ideas about greater European cooperation, improved data exchange between different agencies, those are the way to go, not ID cards.
My partner's from Palestine. I'm very interested in the Palestinian situation.
Yes.
Where do you stand on Palestine?
Well, Liberal Democrats have long supported the case of the people of Palestine for their own homeland, but we believe it must be done in a way that has international support and agreement, and that there's some kind of peaceful coexistence with the State of Israel. because that's the only way you'll get a lasting peace in the region. The Jewish people are entitled to some kind of homeland. This is a people who, through centuries, have had the same kind of displacement and persecution as Palestinians have had in the last century. Two wrongs don't make a right. But I believe you have to have some kind of accommodation. And I think it's a huge shame that the kind of international efforts that have led by the US and the UK that have gone into the Iraq war haven't been deployed more positively on Palestine. Of course, we've had a couple of false dawns. You know, we have had international agreements underwritten or brokered by the Americans or by the West, which have got so far and no further. And part of making it work is going to have an Israeli government that actually wants it to work on the ground. And we've seen these backlashes that where peace has failed, you then get a step back because the Israeli people retreat and elect a more hawkish government. So it's not entirely in the hands of the West, but the West has got a pivotal role to play.
Let's look forward to May the 5th, May the 6th. What do you envisage unfolding from that point?
I mean, a lot of people are casting their vote very thoughtfully this time because I think there is an expectation there will be a Labour government again. That seems to be the most likely outcome. There's nothing certain with our potentially quite volatile electoral system. Once the snowball begins to happen, you can see a lot of seats fall and then everything changes. But I think your assumption's right that we're likely to get a Labour government again, hopefully with a much reduced majority. And I think what you will then see is two things, or in fact three things. One is the marginalisation of the Tory party in the way that, you know, was quite dramatic, dramatic extent, really, for a century. They have failed to put the government on the spot and act as an effective opposition for the last parliament. And I think that's going to be confirmed in increasing marginalisation in this election. That's going to be extremely significant for what happens at future elections. The second thing is the breakthrough for the Liberal Democrats that we expect. Probably greater in swings and percentage votes, possibly even the representation in the Commons, again, because of the electoral system. But that will be very significant, and it will be a coming of age and a vindication for Liberal Democrats. And it will encourage a whole new generation to have confidence in supporting us in the future. And, of course, it will be a mandate for our policies. And the third thing is that if there's a reduced Labour majority at the expense of the Liberal Democrats, the Liberal Democrats will be a pressure group within Parliament with a mandate to press for Lib Dem policies we put into action. Every party presses for its own policies we put into action. But the more MPs they have and the more votes they have behind them in the country, the greater chance they have of implementing that. We've seen it happen in Scotland, where Lib Dems' votes have been decisive, and that's why we've now got free tuition, why we've got the free funding through taxation for long-term care for the elderly. Recommendation of Labour's own Royal Commission that they haven't implemented in England. And I'm confident with a growing Lib Dem force in Parliament, we can see similar progress in this country.
That's a very good party line, that was. But personally, what's in for Bridget Fox?
Well, when I was a teenager, I wanted to be an MP, and then I kind of grew out of it. You know, my contemporaries might want to be astronauts or ballerinas, and then you think, now I'll be a teacher or an accountant, or in my case, a librarian. And then now I've got the chance to pursue that again, so that's a personal thing for me. But I've always believed in public service. I believe I grew up believing that politicians were good people, not bad people. And by the time I was old enough to realise that wasn't the majority view, it was too late, I was hooked. I do believe in public service. I love Islington. I'd love to have the chance to serve in Parliament as well as in the council chamber. I'd like to be a good constituency MP, as Chris Smith has been, and as Lib Dem MPs are famed for being, the Evening Standard rated London MPs for hard work, and Lib Dems came top. We have to be good MPs because we don't have any safe seats and we never take our votes for granted. So I carry on in that tradition. And every MP has the opportunity to champion certain issues. And my particular passions are around women's health and around the environment. And I would use my parliamentary platform to raise those concerns.
OK, well, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Dean.